And I am Catherine Lanfer here in the studio with Farai Chidea. Now, Farai, what are you going to be doing at 3 this afternoon?
I was planning to be eaten.
The White House Commission on Remembrance is going to ask that you also take a moment at 3 o'clock to recall the sacrifice of fallen soldiers. It's just one effort to reclaim Memorial Day from its other status as the kickoff day for summer. It's a struggle that's been going on longer than you might think. Joining us to talk about the origins of Memorial Day and how that meaning has morphed and changed over the decades is Carolyn Janey. She's an assistant professor of history at Purdue University, and she's the author of Burying the Dead But Not the Past, Ladies Memorial Associations and the Lost Cause. She joins us from Luray, Virginia. All right, Professor Janey, let's start by talking about the actual origin of Memorial Day.
Sure. There's a great deal of debate about the day's origins. Different groups, different ladies groups, I should mention, in the South have all claimed responsibility for that day, everywhere from Charleston, South Carolina, to Petersburg, Virginia.
And isn't there an argument about whether it was an effort to honor Confederate soldiers or Union soldiers?
Well, there seems to be little debate about that, because the first efforts were actually by Confederate women to honor Confederate soldiers beginning in 1866.
No, that's funny, because I actually had read that it was Union women who were trying to honor Confederate soldiers. So, but get back to this political nature of the first Memorial Day.
Sure. In the year after the Civil War ended, so the war ends in April of 1865. During that year afterwards, the Union Burial Corps, the United States Army, is burying their dead throughout the South, where most of the soldiers who fought in the Civil War had been killed, but there's no Confederate agency, there's no state agency in the South to do this type of work. So women's organizations throughout the South organized throughout 1865 to bury their dead, to create Confederate cemeteries that are essentially national Confederate cemeteries, just like you have national Union cemeteries at Arlington and at Gettysburg. And so these women, not only do they want to provide centralized resting places for their fallen Confederate soldiers, they also hope to establish an annual tradition of placing flowers and evergreens on the graves in remembrance for their lost cause, for their defeated cause. And so in the spring of 1866, throughout the South, these ladies' organizations pick different days that are symbolic for the local region. Some places choose May 10th. That was the day General Stonewall Jackson had died. Others choose April 26th. That's the day that General Johnston finally surrenders in 1865. And on those days, the communities would gather together. They would all proceed to the cemetery together. The women and children would lay flowers and evergreens on the graves. And former Confederate generals and former Confederate officers, or leaders rather, would offer some sort of speech about the Confederate soldiers. So they're very much a political response to Confederate defeat. They're a way of honoring their Confederate dead and claiming that they were honorable.
At what point did the different Memorial Day traditions coalesce into one?
Well, they don't really ever do so in the South. In the South, people still, communities still celebrate separate Confederate Memorial Days. Petersburg, for example, Petersburg, Virginia, for example, will still celebrate June 9th as their day. But by the time we get to the 1880s, 1890s, former Confederate veterans and Union veterans are gathering together to celebrate Memorial Day, at least the National Memorial Day. As I said, that was created or first established by the Union Veterans Organization, and incidentally by men rather than women, as had been the case in the South, in the spring of 1868. So we have May 30th that's established in 1868, where Union soldiers are remembered, and then Confederates will start to join in these celebrations by the 1880s.
Well, despite whatever conflict over this day and how it was celebrated and who celebrated it, it does seem that veterans, no matter what side you're on, were able to unite over the fact that they saw this day of remembrance slowly morph into a day of barbecue and parties.
Well, that's true. And by the 1890s, at least, and probably earlier, but I found direct evidence in the 1890s, veterans are very upset that people are not taking the day serious, that they're not using it as a day to remember the dead. I found an order issued by the Union Veterans Organization, the Grand Army, in 1894, to ministers throughout the country, asking them to read this message to their congregations on the Sunday before Memorial Day, and requesting that May 30th be set apart to commemorate the memory of departed heroes. And it requested that the ministers discourage church and Sunday school excursions, picnics, which is obviously what we tend to do today, mm-hmm. or other frivolous amusements on the occasion, and ask them instead to honor the men who had served their country.
Just very quickly, because wars are often incredibly controversial, do you think that may have taken some of the shine off of Memorial Day as a serious holiday, particularly the Afghanistan and Iraq wars have been racked by controversy?
Are you asking whether I think that means that we don't celebrate picnics?
Yeah, is there any evidence that the controversies of recent wars, all the way back to Vietnam, have changed the nature of Memorial Day?
Sure. I think any time that we're at war, we're more likely to pay attention and remember the dead. It seems particularly significant that it's in 1971, during the Vietnam War, that Memorial Day is finally declared a national holiday by an act of Congress.
All right. Carolyn Janney, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Carolyn Janney, an assistant professor of history at Purdue University. She joined us from Luray, Virginia.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.